Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Vedic Astrology Podcast. My name is Fiona Marks. I'm delighted to be hosting the episode today. And in this episode, we are going to look at how astrology works. This is part two. You'll remember way back in episode two, we took the opportunity to look at the very big question, how does astrology work? And we put it in a scientific context of investigation, of cause and effect, of pseudoscience. We had a great walk through many of the scientific principles that give us the context of how astrology works. Today, Michael Reed is joining us and he's helping us to unlock the enigma of how astrology works by using ancient texts. It's a fascinating episode. In fact, it's a little bit of a mystery episode today. It's like we're in a Dan Brown novel. It's not the Da Vinci Code, it's the astrology code. And could it really be the case that the secrets of how the mechanics of astrology work have been in front of our eyes all the time? So Michael's going to lead us through his detective work and put all of these pieces together. And we're going to be consulting sources that you and I are probably already familiar with. This whole idea that sometimes knowledge is hidden in plain sight. So we're going to look at about five key areas. The first two are around the five koshas and the three bodies doctrine. So I'm sure that you have come across these before, and we're going to go through them in detail if you haven't, so don't worry. So the five koshas comes from the Taittiriya Upanishads, and the three bodies doctrine comes from the Sarira Traya. We'll be looking at those. And then we're going to be consulting Brihat Parashara Horasastra. We're going to look at chapter two, narration of the avatars, and chapter four, Rashis described. So these are texts that we're all familiar with. Then we're going to consult the Rig Veda and find out all about a deity or a god named Varuna. And finally, we're going to look at the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali and get into Sutra number two. So are you going to join us on this detective hunt today through these ancient texts to answer the question, how does astrology work? I hope so. Let's get started. So, to begin, let's refresh our knowledge of the five kosha model. This is the idea that our experience of being alive, of being fully ourselves, is actually happening in different layers of subtlety. And I'm going to allow Michael now to explain this in much more detail.
Way I like explaining it to people is it's how consciousness comes from its pure unborn form of being unified with God or whatever it is you want to call it into an actual human form, right? Through different layers. There's actually a layered process to that. And that's what the five koshas are. The five koshas from the most subtle to the most dense, I'm going to read for you now, are the Anandamaya Kosha, the Vijnanamaya Kosha, the Manomaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, and Anamaya Kosha. And so we're going to explain what each of those is really all about. So the most subtle sheath is the Anandamaya Kosha. So Anandamaya means composed of Ananda, and Ananda means bliss. So the Anandamaya Kosha quite simply means composed of bliss. And it's, as we said before, it's the subtlest of the five sheaths, okay? In the Upanishads, this sheath is also known as the causal body. And when we're in deep sleep, when the mind and senses aren't functioning quite as intensively to the external world, the Anandamaya Kosha is what stands between the finite world and the self. So Anandamaya, or that which is composed of supreme bliss, is regarded as the most innermost sheath as it relates to the level of the soul, right? In other words, it's the most subtle in relation to the soul, or even beyond that, one's unity with divinity. So the most subtle of those, beyond the realm even of space, is the Anandamaya Kosha, or the bliss sheath. So the bliss sheath normally, as we were saying, has its fullest play during deep sleep, while we're in the dreaming and wakeful states. In the wakeful state itself, it has only a partial manifestation. Okay, the blissful sheath is a reflection of the Atman, which is pure soul. Okay, so you can understand Anandamaya Kosha as being connected to soul, or the purity of soul. But even beyond that, even that's somewhat of a limited description of what that's about. If you have to give it an attribution to an element, as we were discussing before, it's somewhat attributed to ether, which is space. But it's a concept that's even beyond that.
Beautiful. So here Michael has opened our explanation of the five koshas by putting them in context and describing the bliss body. If, as you're listening along, you'd like to build up a visualization, perhaps can we imagine a skyscraper built of building blocks? Could we put bliss body at the top of that? It's the top of the skyscraper building block. Let's hear about the next layer.
So the Vijnanamaya Kosha means that which is composed of Vijnana, or intellect. So what is our intellect? Our intellect is the faculty through which we discriminate and understand the difference between one thing or another. The intellect also wills things through thought, right? It creates thoughts in a certain direction, which then drives our will. It can be understood as a combination of intellect, Vijnanamaya Kosha, I should say, can be understood as a combination of intellect and the five sense organs. So the sense organs give us feedback into what's actually going on. And with that feedback, we use the process of discrimination, and we respond, you know, through the concept of our thoughts. But the realm of Vijnanamaya Kosha is before that even becomes a conscious awareness of that thought. It's the intellect functioning above the realm of, you know, pure conscious awareness. So the knowledge sheath is connected with the concept of awareness or consciousness, and it's somewhat impacted or condensed, is probably a better way to explain it, by the three gunas, which exist within creation, which are rajasic, racy energy, tamasic, or dense energy, or sattvic, or like, you know, more aware energy. So best way to understand it is the energy of intellect and discrimination, which on a certain level is happening over and above the realm of your consciousness. So it's that process of thinking that on a certain level begins to give rise to the experience of consciousness. But the Vijnanamaya Kosha, which is where the thought processes somewhat get stirred, gives rise to the Manamaya Kosha, which is the experience of the thinking, or the experience of consciousness. That's probably the best way to understand it. Okay, so the knowledge sheath can't be connected to the Anandamaya Kosha because it's different, because it's subject to change, it's insentient, it's a limited thing, and it's not constantly present. So the Vijnanamaya Kosha is connected to the air element, because the air element relates to the concept of movement. Okay. So that's the Anandamaya Kosha and the Vijnanamaya Kosha.
Great job, Michael, explaining all of these subtleties of these layers. We just talked about the knowledge body. If you are building up an image in your mind. We've come down now from the top of the skyscraper, the fifth floor. We've taken the elevator one more layer down. We're on the fourth floor of our building block skyscraper, if that's your visualization that you're building with us here today. And what I want to briefly point out is that this interview with Michael is part of a much larger video on his YouTube channel. Please take the time to go see that video, because Michael goes into explaining this five kosha model with such integration. In, as you noticed, he began talking about the gunas there. When he was talking about the bliss body, he linked it with all of the elements. So for today's mystery detective story, we are cutting to the main contents of this puzzle that we want to put together. But I really invite you to go watch the full video. And of course, I'm including the link in the description and the show notes. Okay, so we've covered the bliss body and the knowledge body. Let's hear about the mental body.
Then we have Manomaya Kosha, which means composed of manas, or mind, or the consciousness. So when we have our mind with the five sensory organs, it's said to constitute Manomaya Kosha. That's going about the experience of consciousness with your five senses. The Vijnanamaya Kosha is the thoughts over and above which give rise to the concept of Manomaya Kosha. Okay? So Manomaya Kosha is when we begin to become more, if you have to kind of give a relevance to it, more like a person. We begin to become more encased in the concept of being a physical presence. So the Manomaya Kosha becomes the thing that gives rise to the concept of I and mine. Or, you know, this is me, this is mine, here I am. When we begin to become more aware of a separate individual, then that's the Manomaya Kosha in action. Then you, and that's connected to the fire element, okay? Fire element, you know, gives, you know, warmth. And in this instance, Manomaya Kosha gives warmth to existence. It equally gives the concept of motion, because the mind is constantly moving, or motion within the physical realm, which is another element of fire, somewhat a little different than the concept of, and I know this sounds very odd, but a little bit different than the concept of the air element, which is about things getting displaced so they naturally move. Fire element is self-induced movement. Okay, self-induced movement of the mind is probably a good way to understand that.
I love that, self-induced movement of the mind. It just describes so much of the experience of suffering and being human. Anyway, I digress. We are just recapping that Michael explained the mental body. So if you're building this visual model with me, we've come down from the bliss body on the fifth floor. We've caught the elevator down to the fourth floor, the knowledge body. And now we've taken the elevator one more level down into the mental body. And let's find out now about the energy body.
Then we have Pranamaya Kosha. Most people understand the concept of prana. Prana is the vital principle that tends to give energy to the body. And really, it holds together the body and the mind, which, if you notice, when your mind gets bothered by an experience externally, what do we hear constantly when people are stressed? We're constantly hearing. And you see that the breath starts getting short because the person's mind is getting a bit disturbed and stressed out, and the body responds to that. And that's Pranamaya Kosha at work. So prana, or the vital principle in the body, pervades the organism. And its physical manifestation is through the breath. When this vital principle of prana exists in the organisms, as long as it exists there, life will continue for the person. And when prana no longer exists, then the person's life is considered to be over. When the Pranamaya Kosha is coupled with the five organs of action, it forms the vital sheath. okay, which is the pranamaya kosha, which then becomes more denser and becomes like, you know, the actual body, as we're going to talk about here in a moment. Okay, it's a modification of vayu or air, but this is going to be really confusing because pranamaya kosha is related to the water element, okay? And it's how that emotion gives rise to the shifts and the changes within the vitality of the body. But pranamaya kosha itself is also connected to vayu or air as it enters into and comes out of the body. And that's those are the things that tend to stir the prana.
Okay, that's our description of the energy body. Thinking about our visualization, we've come down one more elevator stop now. We're right on that second floor, the energy body. And let's hear about the final sheath, the final layer, the physical body.
Then you have the most dense kosha, which is the anamaya kosha, which translated means that which is composed or nourished by food, okay? And the reason it's called this is because through the anamaya kosha, it's how we identify ourselves as going, here I am as a human, you know, with skin, eyes, bones, etc. But the real reality is knowing yourself as not just being this body. So the physical body is formed of the essence of food, and birth and death are the attributes of the anamaya kosha. And this most closely relates to the earth element.
Wonderful. Here is our full description of the five koshas, the five layers, the five bodies. And if you think of your building block skyscraper, we now have the physical body as that first body on the ground, above that the energy body, above that the mental body, above that the knowledge body, with the bliss body as our fifth building block in our visualization of this model as a skyscraper or tower. And another way that you might like to think about this model, those of you who follow the podcast know I love analogies. You might have listened to astrology as symphony music, so you know that I gain a lot from comparing how one thing is similar to something else. For the five koshas, I think one of the ways that we could understand this model is to think of the car and the physical car as being the physical body, so that metalness and the tires and all of the physical attributes that we touch that are the car, that is our physical body. And for the energy body, we could imagine the car's electrical system. Now, I do know that in cars, you can actually replace the wiring or replace the battery. But let's imagine that that's not the case. When the battery runs out or when the wiring stops working, it doesn't matter how much fuel you put in the car. It's not moving anywhere without that vital spark of electricity that's transmitted through the body. So let's think of the car as the physical body and the electrical system is that energy body. And then that leaves me with the driver as the mental body, the person who is moving the steering wheel. The driver thinks that this is my car and my identity is wrapped up in my car. And, you know, we all know people who identify with their car. And it also feels pretty great to be the driver. You know, you can move this vehicle around. So it definitely gives one the sense of one's ego. So mental body could be the driver. And then perhaps to expand this analogy up towards the knowledge body, we could imagine perhaps that the knowledge body is the GPS. It's the guidance system. It's the maps. It's the way that we can witness where we're going. We can have some detachment that I am this little car and I want to move here and this is how I'm going to get from A to B. It's got that knowing to it, and it's got that witness mindfulness element that we know comes from the knowledge body. And it's also got that lovely quality that Michael spoke about, that it's not always present. that we consult the knowledge body. So we go consult the GPS and then we drive around. But there are many things, that many journeys that we learn automatically that we no longer connect to the GPS because we just know how to get there. Okay, and so then that leaves us with the bliss body. And for me, the bliss body is, it's the destination. It's the home that we are driving to. It's that intangible feeling that we know when we get where we're going, that we've arrived, that that's the destination. That's what I'm calling the bliss body. So the whole point of having this physical car is to take us towards that feeling of home, that feeling of destination, that feeling of bliss. So we can get very distracted in that driver level where we, it's just so much fun to have a car and we enjoy driving it. And if we don't consult with the knowledge body or the bliss body, then we're just kind of driving around, which has a certain level of entertainment all of its own. But eventually the experience of being alive, we do want to check in with the GPS, and the GPS is only useful if it's connected to that home destination, to where we're really going, to that feeling of bliss, of home. So you may, as we're on a podcast, an audio medium, you may want to have the visualization of the 5 building block skyscraper, or you might like to have the analogy of the car. Hopefully one of those is going to help us get through solving this mystery of how astrology works. And I also want to recap one thing that is important in moving us to the next part of our discussion of these puzzle pieces in solving the mystery of how astrology works. You might remember that Michael mentioned the causal body. I'm just going to replay that.
The Ananda Maya Kosha quite simply means composed of bliss. And it's, as we said before, it's the subtlest of the 5 sheets. Okay. In the Upanishads, this sheath is also known as the causal body. And when we're in deep sleep, when the mind and senses aren't functioning quite as intensively to the external world, the Anandamaya Kosha is what stands between the finite world and the self.
So here we have, just recapping, that Michael is linking the bliss body to the causal body. And by doing that, he's bringing in the 3 bodies doctrine that we spoke about at the beginning. So we're moving on slightly to another text here. We're just integrating the 5 koshas with the 3 bodies. The 3 bodies are the causal body, the astral body, and the physical body. That's the 3 bodies doctrine. And you can see that Michael's made that link between the bliss body and the causal body. So he's joining these 2 models, putting them side by side so that we can understand how to unlock this mystery. And once again, I just promote to you to check in with Michael's whole video, because this is one of the things that's really rich in the discussion that I had with Michael, is how the 5 kosher model connects with the 5 elements, connects with the gunas, connects with the 3 bodies doctrine, and more and more. So please, if you've enjoyed today's podcast and you want to know more, go check out the full video, which I'm providing the links to. Now, we've got our foundation. We've had a look at the 5 koshas and introduced how it connects with the 3 bodies doctrine. These are texts, or these are models that are well known to all of us in Vedic astrology world, all of us in yoga world, in Ayurveda world. So there's nothing hidden or strange about what we're talking about. These are in plain sight. Now, let's add into that some very interesting insights from Brihat Parashara Horasastra, right at the beginning of the book, chapter 2, something that maybe we've all skipped over. And have we been missing the keys to answering this mystery of the mechanic? How does astrology work? Let's allow Michael to walk us through what Brihat Parashara has to say, and what is the significance?
You know, in Brihat Parashara Horas Shastra, there's a chapter called The Narration of the Avatars. And it begins to give a perfect explanation of how astrology works. Only thing is if you just read over it lightly, as I was saying earlier, because most people, when they go in and they read Brihat Parashara Horas Shastra, they're wanting to learn the astrology techniques. So they tend to skim over this bit and not really take it in, but it's pretty deep when you think about what's being put forward here. So it says the supreme unborn spirit. Now that in itself, if you just take it like quickly, you're going to go, okay, the supreme unborn spirit. Well, no, really think about that. The supreme unborn spirit. It's not necessarily bound by our physical states. It's unborn, really, right? So the supreme spirit, it's also unborn, but it's also been here many different times. It's had many different descents. Okay, so the supreme spirit has descended many times. And then it goes on to say Janardana, which is a name of the divine that agitates humans, causing fear and worry. That sounds like such a really wonderful energy. And I always like hear that and go, gee, that's just really great. So that moment where you're going, you know, why me? Then that's Janardana at work. It's the concept that's done so that we're stimulated into working out our karma. So Janardana seems like a very scary energy on many levels, but it's doing that for a very specific reason. The grahas seize upon you and they cause you to behave a certain way. So Janardana, or God in the form of grahas, rewards the fruits of our karma. So Janardana is the aspect of God that agitates humans, causing fear and worry. But Janardana in the form of the planets, or the grahas, rewards the fruits of the karma of the living beings.
So powerful and insightful right there in the opening statements of this chapter. I love how the grahas are being mentioned here, and I think it's really important that we keep that in mind, and the link between the unborn spirit and using the grahas to incarnate. But let's see what else Brihat Parashara has to say.
It then goes on to say that destroying the strength of the daichas, which are more of the demonic race, so destroying the strength of the daichas and increasing the strength of the devas, aiming to establish dharma, or the path of righteousness, the auspicious births of the divine proceed regularly from the planets, and all others are also planetary born. That means me and you and everything else, right? So all others are also planetary born.
Just so beautiful to link those births of the divine, not only to the avatars, but also to you and I. We're all going through the same experience of rectifying the karma through the grahas. And there's even more. Let's hear.
Those with Pada Atma, or Supreme Soul, as the larger portion, are all known as heavenly. Those with Jiva as the larger portion are known as the living beings. Pada Atma portion has gone forth from the planets, the sun, etc., and given birth to Rama, Krishna, and all of the avatars. Then those grahas and the Pada Atma portion are absorbed at the end after concluding what they need to do in order to purify a person's consciousness. They are absorbed back into the divine.
So this is just great. This reminds me of all of those stories of the avatars as they incarnate to solve the big problems of humans and to teach. And then once they've done their job, the Rama or Krishna or whichever avatar we're speaking of, once they've concluded their purifying business, they're absorbed back into the supreme unborn spirit. And guess what? Let's listen to this final part.
The jiva portion goes forth and is born as humans, etc., and living beings. Similarly, these also then melt at their end into the imperceptible. Okay, so it's kind of explaining here that the Pada Atma and Jivatma are all one, and they're also connected to those deities. We imagine the separation.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. These beginning sutras of chapter 2 really giving us a context. And let's bring this over to our mental diagram that we have the tower stacked of physical body, energy body, mental body, knowledge body, bliss body at the top. We've noticed that the bliss body is the same as the causal body from the three bodies doctrine. And then taking a statement here from chapter 2 of Brihat Parashara Sastra, the supreme unborn spirit incarnates through the planets to resolve the karma of the living beings. And I want to just highlight here, if we're building that layer, so we've got bliss body is the same as causal body, and we know that it relates to the statement about the supreme unborn spirit, because that's kind of bliss body territory right there. It incarnates through the planets. So let's add planets as well to this very top layer of the table that we're building in our mind, and how important the planets are for allowing the spirit to incarnate in order to resolve karma. The grahas, the planets, are the energies that pull at that consciousness, bring it into a physical form, and allow the karma to play out so that things can be rectified, things can be cleansed, cleared, and we are released from our karma and returned to bliss. So this is what we can take from Brihat Parashara Hora Sastra, Chapter 2. We've integrated it with the five koshas and with the three bodies doctrine. And our mystery continues. What else can we find out from Brihat Parashara Hora Sastra?
The Rashis are a field in which those incarnations of Vishnu or those planetary energies operate. And that's what begins to be described here in this chapter on the Rashi characteristics, where he goes on to say the imperceptible Vishnu. So that which is imperceptible, but also permeates everything, Janardana, is also the Kalarupa, or the figure of time, whose limbs or body parts become unconscious as the Rashis or the signs, beginning from Misha, the ram. Okay, so this is saying that the Rashis are unconscious body parts of Vishnu.
And this is a very important puzzle piece, isn't it? And we're going to add it to our mental model. But before we do, let's just highlight this is from chapter 4 of Brihat Parashara Sastra. The description of the Rashis, this is Sutra 2. And I also want to highlight that, have you noticed how the avatars are gods and deities? We just spoke about them in Chapter 2. We know that the nakshatras, for example, all have deities, but have you ever noticed how the Rashis have earthly creatures? They're, if you think about all of the archetypes or symbols that go with the signs, they're all animals or humans. We've got Gemini the twins, we've got Scorpio the scorpion, Pisces the fish. As you go round, you can see that each of those Rashi signs has an earthbound creature as its mascot rather than a deity or a god. So it's reinforcing what we are hearing here in Brihat Parashara Hora Sastra, that the Rashis are the limbs. They are Vishnu, the Kalarupa. So if we take that to our mental model, we were building up, last time we came to this model, we were building up the bliss body, that layer going across the top there with the causal body and all the way over to the planets. Let's now move right down to the ground floor of our tower where we've got the physical body. We know that that maps to the physical body in the three bodies doctrine. So we can add that to that layer. And now we know from Brihat Parashara Parashastra that Vishnu is Kalrupa and is the limbs of the Rashis. The Rashis have a link to the physical body. Let's add them in at that layer, that the physical body and the Rashis have something to do with each other. Whereas if we go all the way to the top of the tower, the bliss body, we know that the planets are what's involved in pulling the bliss body into physical experience. So we know something about the causal body. We know something about the physical body. What about the astral body? What do we know about the astral body? How is that bridging the gap between the physical body and the causal body? And what communicates between those planets and the Rashis? That's where we're going to go next, is have a look at the astral body. But before we do, let's just wrap up this section as Michael just summarizes the journey we've been on so far.
Then those energies of the signs are taken and they're made on a certain level more dense and focused and fine-tuned into interacting with the bhavas or the houses or the different areas of our life. So the planets are creating the stir within our existence, and then that's being like focused through the Rashis so that it impacts a certain area of our life.
Great summary of what we've covered so far with the five koshas, the three bodies doctrine, and two important chapters from Brihat Parashara Horasastra. This leaves us with another tangent to go looking in our mystery. We've got another area that we can investigate, because so far we haven't heard about the astral body and how is that bridging the gap between the physical body and the causal body. We also haven't heard anything about the nakshatras.
Nakshatras are a different thing all of their own. They act as a messenger from the Anamaya Kosha, the Vijnanamaya Kosha, into the realm of the Manamaya Kosha. So they're like the bridge, so to speak.
All right, let's see what else we can find out about the nakshatras. It sounds like it's time to fill in that part of the puzzle. To do that, we are going to learn more about a god named Varuna.
The deity Varuna, who is a Vedic deity who seemingly was connected to different things, but he's not really. So Varuna as a Vedic deity was first connected with the skies. And a saying about Varuna was that he placed the stars in the firmament and split heaven and earth asunder. Okay, so the stars being placed in the firmament means that Varuna is responsible for creating the nakshatras, because he created the stars, which is what the nakshatras are. They're sections of the skies connected to fixed stars. Okay. Then he's connected to water, which we'll explain here in a moment. Then justice, and then the concept of truth. We'll revisit how all of those are interconnected.
There's something so beautiful about that statement, isn't there? Splitting heaven and earth and creating the stars in the firmament as a way to reconnect heaven and earth. I think it's just something beautiful about the role of astrology for all of us. But let's keep going about this talented god, Varuna.
Varuna was also one of the Adityas. So the Adityas are known as the sons of Aditi, who's the boundless mother. Okay, so the Adityas are the children of Aditi. So the Rig Veda lists seven of these, while the text Bhagavata Purana lists 12, which are then referenced to the sun. So if Varuna is connected as one of the Adityas, then that means that Varuna is connected to the sun. Okay, because the Adityas are 12 different versions of the sun, you know, turned into deities. And so that's something that we're supposed to note. Now, the sun in astrology relates to the Atman or the soul. Okay, so Varuna is connected to the soul because Varuna is the sun, you know, as a deity, so to speak, one of the Adityas.
Okay, so now we know that Varuna has not only split the heaven and earth and created the stars, also therefore creating the kshatras, but now we know that Varuna is equally related to the sun or is an incarnation of the sun.
Varuna is also the lord of the waters and water creatures. And as lord of the waters and water creatures, he also relates to the oceanic consciousness of God, which is vast and deep. The ocean waves themselves are a result of the moon's gravitational pull on the earth. Right, so we need to remember that. The ocean waves are a result of the moon's gravitational pull on the earth. Varuna is also connected to the waters. So that means that if Varuna is connected to the waters and to consciousness and to nakshatras, Varuna is connected to the experience of consciousness and equally the experience of the nakshatras, which are stars in the sky. And for there to be those stars in the sky and the splitting of heaven and earth asunder, there has to come into existence the concept of duality and how to rectify that experience of duality, which is generally done through the nakshatras.
More and more, we're seeing how Varuna is essential to understanding the mechanics of astrology. I wonder if there's any more. Let's listen.
Now, Krishna, which is the incarnation of Vishnu that's connected to the moon, states that amongst water creatures, he is Varuna. So Krishna is the incarnation, as I just said, that's connected to the moon. So it's no surprise to understand Varuna, because if Krishna says amongst water creatures, he's Varuna, Krishna is saying that, you know, he's Varuna. So we can understand Varuna is also being the presiding deity of the moon. But wait, Varuna is connected to the sun. Which of those is it? It's both. Okay, because the moon is our manas, our sensory mind, and the Atman is the soul. So Varuna is connected to both of those. So he bridges the soul to the consciousness.
This is exactly the entity that we're looking for. I'm beginning to think that Varuna is the astrologer. Let's hear a summary from Michael.
Because the moon is our manas, our sensory mind, and the Atman is the soul. So Varuna is connected to both of those. So he bridges the soul to the consciousness, okay? And he placed the nakshatras in the sky. So he placed the nakshatras in the sky and he creates movement within the waters through the oceans, because the ocean waves are a result of the moon's gravitational pull on the earth. And there's an experience within that that stirs the oceans of our mind. Then we go through the experience of rectifying our consciousness. Okay, so Varuna placed the nakshatras in the sky, and each night Varuna, as the moon, visits a different one. As he does, he creates waves of consciousness. The moon is also connected to the earth, which we can understand as the Rashis. When people say the earth doesn't exist in astrology, tell them that it's the signs, okay? And then they'll understand. As we note, Varuna is also a sun deity. And Varuna is the moon, bridges the Atman, more specifically the Pada Atman, together with the earthbound consciousness of the Jivatman. Okay, so that's an important concept to grasp in terms of this. And that's how Varuna is connected to the sky. So that's the nakshatras. The nakshatras create a stirring within our consciousness. That's the waters. That then causes us to rectify our karma and to experience truth. And that's how Varuna is connected to all of those experiences.
Just loved hearing about Varuna, what Michael has researched and brought together for us here. We can see is that missing link for the mental diagram that we're building up in our mind on the podcast today. If we return to the idea of our skyscraper, the building blocks. We already had the physical body allocated to the body, the physical body in the three bodies doctrine. We had the bliss body allocated to the causal body in the three body doctrine, but we didn't know what was going on in the astral body. And it's interesting, isn't it? The astral body even has that word astral in there. It has the word stars right there. And now we know that Varuna is really that deity that is moving between the causal body and the physical body, churning through the oceans of consciousness, connecting the soul to the body through the movements of the moon, spending a night in each nakshatra. So then the nakshatra is right over on the far end of our layer diagram that we're building. We had the planets linking to the bliss body. That's the grahas that pull consciousness into the physical experience. We know at the bottom we've got the rashis representing the physical body. And now the elevator that's going between them up and down our skyscraper is the nakshatras, because Varuna helps us link together the nakshatras, the sun, which is the soul, the moon, which is our ocean of consciousness, and it's linking between the planets and the rashis.
That's how Varuna is connected to the sky. So that's the nakshatras. The nakshatras create a stirring within our consciousness. That's the waters. That then causes us to rectify our karma and to experience truth. And that's how Varuna is connected to all of those experiences.
So here, Michael is really giving us the physical mechanic of how astrology works. It's not answering it in some philosophical or some contextual way. It's talking about the power of the moon and the moon's link to our mind, the importance of sleep, the importance of nighttime when the moon moves through each of these nakshatras, translating as a bridge between the planets and the rashis, between our bliss body and our physical body, by going through churning the oceans of our knowledge body, mental body, and energy body. So it's like updating our sense of the destination through this physical mechanic of how astrology works. What a detective, what a mystery we have been solving here today. And would you believe it, Michael's got even more to share. We have got a link as well with Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and we're going to listen to Sutra number 2.
There's a sutra in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. It's one of the first ones. I think it's actually Sutra 2. And it's the translation of it means that the yoga is stopping the modulations of the mind. Okay, so it's stopping or not being impacted by those waves. Right? When we get to that state, we're no longer going through the experience of waves or ripples, or the experiences that we're having no longer stir us or create disturbances in our prana or in our vitality.
So here, following with Michael, not only have we understood the mechanic of astrology, that the moon moving through the nakshatras is linking all of those layers, the five koshas, the three bodies doctrine, and helping humans, the living beings, to resolve their karma. So that's the mystery that we've kind of been on, and we've solved with all of these puzzle pieces. But now Michael is leading us even to say, what is the significance of that? And we can see that right here in Sutra 2, we have this phrase, regulating the modulations of the mind, which is exactly what Varuna, the nakshatras, that experience of being alive, is giving us modulations of the mind. And we can see that the sutras go on to talk about the five modulations of the mind. There's understanding, misunderstanding, imagination, sleep, and memory. And our ears prick up at sleep because it's one of the things that has connected the whole podcast today, is that when we are in the sleep state, we are more able to connect to the bliss body. So we know that something about the mechanic of astrology and rectifying our karma works through that sleeping, through that connecting with the bliss body. But also we can see that understanding and misunderstanding are also modulations of the mind. And astrology is helping us in several ways. One is to understand the true purpose of sleep. So that's great. We know that that's when we're closest to the bliss body. But it's also helping us with understanding, misunderstanding. These we can tell straight away from the words that are used, understanding and misunderstanding. We know we're talking about the knowledge body. And astrology helps us connect with the knowledge body, which gives us some distance from the drama of those churnings of the ocean. So I think this is wonderful insight into what astrology is really for. It's, in my opinion, when I listen to this from Michael, what I'm hearing is that it's not for us to become so sensitive to the modulations of the mind, not for us to become so focused on that movement of the moon through the ocean of consciousness, but rather for us to detach from those modulations of the mind, to see them as waves, just like all seafarers understand there are waves. We don't take them personally. We just ride the wave as best as we can. So it helps us be in our knowledge body and understand which waves are coming, and therefore we're better prepared to how to handle our boat through that particular form of waves. But we are not taking the waves themselves personally. And this is really key to yoga, isn't it?
I quite often have these conversations with people about astrology not being a yoga. And it really is, on a very deep level, a yoga and a way of a path or a way or a path of beginning to understand yourself and doing the work that you need to do so you can get beyond that experience of being, you know, bound by what's going on in your life.
Yes, this is the gift of the mystery that we're solving today by looking at the ancient texts. It's not just the mechanic, which has been in front of our eyes the whole time, unveiled here by Michael's detective work, but also the purpose, what we can really do with that. So astrology can help us move into our knowledge body in relation to the stirrings of the oceans of consciousness, because it objectifies all of those movements. It takes them and places them somewhere where we can witness them rather than being in the middle of them. And this prevents us from identifying with the drama, because we are all here to clean out our karma. We know that that's what we're doing. So what is the role of the moon? What's the job of the moon?
The moon's job, or the consciousness's job, is to reflect the light of the Atman, or reflect the light of the soul, reflect the light of the sun. And the moon waxes and wanes in its capacity to do that. So we get caught up in this turbulence of our existence. And so the moon's a really wonderful planet to explain the concept of manas or sensory mind. We get lost in it sometimes. And we don't, we don't see that purity. And that's why the nakshatras are so vitally important. And nakshatras are connected to every single planet. Nakshatras can be connected to, if you work with house cusps, you can connect nakshatras to houses. So really everything can be connected to a nakshatra, and you can understand how you're supposed to grow any experience in your life.
That's such beautiful sharing from Michael, such generous insights into how to use the nakshatras, but also such compassion, the reminder to have compassion with the self, because the moon, that is key to the mechanic of how astrology works, it is changing every night. It's waxing and waning all the time, creating these modulations. So it's natural that we have, while we haven't been aware of this insight, of course we get affected by those changes in the moon. And with knowledge, we can begin to regulate the modulations of the mind, have that healthy relationship with the waves, knowing that they are occurring rather than taking them personally. So let's recap this incredible mystery journey that Michael has been so generous to share with us, in all these inputs from different ancient texts, and answer the question how astrology works in a very mechanical way, the actual process. So astrology works by the moon churning the oceans of consciousness. Each night it travels through a nakshatra. Therefore, it's linking the planets, the causal bodies, to the rashis, the physical body, and all the layers in between, helping the living beings to rectify their karma. What a powerful journey Michael has taken us on. I'm going to leave the last couple of phrases for him. Here we go.
That's how Varuna is connected to the sky. So that's the nakshatras. The nakshatras create a stirring within our consciousness. That's the waters. That then causes us to rectify our karma and to experience truth. And that's how Varuna is connected to all of those experiences.
And finally, reminding us the job of the moon.
The moon's job, or the consciousness's job, is to reflect the light of the Atman, or reflect the light of the soul, reflect the light of the sun. And the moon waxes and wanes in its capacity to do that. So we get caught up in this turbulence of our existence. And so the moon's a really wonderful planet to explain the concept of manas or sensory mind. We get lost in it sometimes. And we don't, we don't see that purity.
So beautiful. Thank you, Michael Reed, for sharing all of your investigation with us, for answering this question, how does astrology work? You've answered it in a completely different way to episode 2. I want to thank everybody who has listened to the podcast today and invite you to let us know, what are your reflections from today's podcast? What does it make you think about? What insights are you having? Get onto the blog and share your thoughts. And please also go ahead and watch Michael's the YouTube video on his channel, where he's got the time and the freedom to go into so much more of the interconnectedness of these ancient texts. Thank you so much for your company. I look forward to seeing you and hearing, listening with you, talking with you on the next episode of the Vedic Astrology Podcast. Until then, stay well. Bye.